on this episode of Drive with Woody Fit, I go in it solo again, and I talk about today's workout, which was way off the cuff, whether that was a good or bad thing, or whether there are good or bad things about training off the cuff. Pizza with Kodiak cakes, that was fucking banging. That was so good. This DNA testing company that is sending your data to the FBI. Hopefully the FBI doesn't just show up at my door, because this kind of worries me. A new study that finds the simple secret to losing the fat you can't see. Yes, there's fat on your body that you cannot see. And how do you lose it? Find out in this episode. How to select your meat openers. This is good for some powerlifters out there. And this is something that I didn't know, and that I kind of just wung in my past two powerlifting meets. So it's cool to learn it. Then I answer some questions. Taya asks, are there exercises to help tone the butt and the stomach? Josh asks, if I was told that I get 8 hours of sleep a night, I'll see better results in weight loss than getting less than 8 hours. Yvonne says, what is a good way to grow your chest and increase bench press? All in this episode of Drive with Woody Fit. So if you like the show and you like what we're doing, please leave us a review on the Facebook page or on iTunes, and we'll send you a Drive with Woody Fit decal, a Drive with Woody Fit coffee mug, or some apparel from the website. So anyway, without further ado, let's get into this episode of Drive with Woody Fit. This was such a long weekend for me. So it's currently Sunday night. The kids are already in bed, and I had a episode already planned out, so I figured I would go ahead and sit down and do it. But you know, this weekend is whenever I have drill, whenever I go to drill, the weekend is always super, super long. And I just absolutely get thrown off because I'm gone for so long, I can't necessarily do a full meal prep for the next week. So not only does it throw off that weekend and anything I had planned to get done for the weekend for the podcast or the Facebook page or just regular client stuff, you know, it throws off the whole week afterwards, because when I finally get home Sunday night or Monday night, I'm cramming to get my shit together for the rest of the week. So it's been a little bit crazy, but thankfully I was able to get in a workout tonight. And normally Sunday's my rest day, but I've been feeling pretty good recently, especially because of my shoulder issue is starting to definitely getting better. So I kind of felt like I wanted to push it a little bit. So I ended up doing a pretty off the cuff workout tonight. So I kind of figured I would start this episode talking about going to the gym and winging it and just kind of training off the cuff. I basically used to do this, right? And I don't do it anymore, or at least when I do it, it's only on a day that's supposed to be a rest day, but I'm feeling good and I feel like I want to push it a little bit. And so I think it's extremely important to not just wing it every time you go to the gym, especially if you're training for a particular goal. Now, like I've said before on the podcast, I'm training for a really heavy deadlift. I want to get my deadlift up to 540 and maintain and stay in the 148 weight class. Now, you know, I'm not just going to say that and then work out hard and push myself every time I go into the garage to work out and that be that. You know, I've sat down and 8 weeks ago, exactly 8 weeks ago, wrote out a program for myself coming up to this meet. And so I actually ended up, a funny story about that is I counted the weeks wrong. So I ended my program a week short of when the meet is. So like my program was done today and my meet is 2 weeks out, not 1 week out. I was supposed to, my plan was to stop this program 1 week out before the meet, but I'm 2 weeks out. So I'm going to have to figure out what to do for the next week, which will probably be phasing back to the first phase of this program just for a week. To really push it on this last week, and then the last week focus on, you know, speed and form and whatnot. You know, so it's massively important, you know, if you're training for a particular goal, to follow a program. I don't care what that goal is, you know, whether you want to look better, you want to build a butt, you want to build your chest, you want to build you know, arms. You want to build machine gun arms. You know, by the way, if you want to get machine gun arms, head over to the website, executivefitllc.com/guides, where you can get the ARM 240 Bravo workout absolutely free. And me and Megan and Michael put this workout together in a way that's going to help you build massive arms. And the concept behind it is really focusing on taking a compound movement and an isolation exercise so you can really train those muscles to failure. So go check that out if you're interested. But, you know, whatever your goal is, whatever you're trying to do with your body, performance-wise or physique-wise, whatever it is, you want to be following some sort of pre-written program. I mean, fuck, I'm a trainer, and I still write my own programming. I don't just wing it, you know, because there has to be structure there, right? You can't just go into the gym and work out really hard and that be it. You know, you've got to have structure. But, you know, there is a positive side to training off the cuff. And, you know, sometimes training off the cuff can be good for creativity. You know, you can kind of get creative. Maybe you're doing some exercises you don't normally do. It can test your knowledge of programming a little bit, right? So if you're following a program, you can kind of take some of the themes of that program and create a workout on the fly that maybe follows some of the themes of a program that you may have been following. You know, it can also be a release and somewhat relaxing to just go in and do what you want to do and just do the things, do the exercises that you like. You know, it may not have to be a total, like a perfect split. Like, it doesn't have to be just a chest and triceps workout. You know, if you like training chest, but you also like training legs, you know, you can bench and you can do some other chest movements, and then you can go squat and do some other leg movements. So, you know, when you're training off the cuff, you can do whatever you want to do. You know, do some kettlebell swings, maybe do some Turkish get-ups to improve that shoulder stability. But, you know, there's many other things that you get out of training off the cuff. You know, it's not all bad. You know, there is some benefits to it. And then, like I said, you can focus on areas that you want to improve on. You know, but some of the bad things about training off the cuff, and this is really if you're just training off the cuff consistently, and that's pretty much what you do, is that there can be a lack of consistency. When I was training off the cuff all the time and was like, I know what I'm doing, I know enough, I'm not going to sit down and actually write myself a program, I'm just going to train the way that I want to, there was a lack of consistency in, you know, what days I went, what times I went. And I mean, sometimes life gets in the way of that, whether you have a program or not, but, you know, especially in terms of what I'm doing, you know, the frequency can be affected. So, like, for example, there in the very beginning of my, like, lifting career, we can call it my fitness journey, I maybe squatted once every other week or once a week, just because I hated squats. I was not good at them. I pretty much didn't go above 185, and if I did even touch 185, it was for, you know, maybe 5 to 8 reps, just because I wasn't good at them. I didn't think I was good at them. I didn't bother to look into proper squat form, and this was before, you know, before I even became a personal trainer. This was, like, very beginning shit, and so the frequency wasn't there to really get all of the benefits from squatting regularly. I hardly ever touched deadlifts. You know, I again, with them, never even bothered to look up proper form. The only major compound lift that I really ever did was bench press and shoulder press. And, you know, I know I've talked about before on this show about the benefits of compound movements, and now I'm absolutely all about compound movements. They're exercises that have been around for ages, and there's a reason they've been around for ages, and people have been doing them for ages because they fucking work, and they send the right signal. And, you know, my theory when I had first started was, well, I just want to grow my muscles. I don't care about deadlifting heavy. I don't care about squatting heavy. I just want to get bigger. So if I train the muscles, then they're going to get bigger. Even if I sit on the leg extension and do a whole bunch of leg extensions, my legs are going to grow. Yeah, you know, they might grow and, I mean, they're definitely going to grow, but they're not going to grow as good as they could if I were to incorporate squats, get really good at squatting, because that's the best way that you can overload the legs. I mean, okay, think about it this way. If all you did was leg extensions for your quads, you know, the front part of your thigh, right, then you would get really good at leg extensions. So eventually, you can leg extension the whole stack, which is what, 200 pounds, right? Maybe I don't even know if leg extension machines go up to 200 pounds. So let's say you can do that for reps. Great. Good for you. How are you going to add more weight to that? Number one. Number two, you start adding more weight to that and you're really putting a lot of tension on that knee and that patellar tendon and all of the other tendons and ligaments that are a part of the knee. And it's just not a good idea to go super heavy with that. Now compare that to a barbell squat where you practice a barbell squat, you get really good at a barbell squat, and then you can eventually load more weight on that barbell squat to overload the quads, in essence, than you could doing leg extensions alone. Now, of course, yes, you have other muscles involved in a squat. It's a massive compound movement. You got movement at multiple joints. You've got your core to stabilize. Your glutes are working, your hamstrings, your quads, you know, even your calf and your anterior tibialis, the muscle on the front of your shin, those are involved with stabilization. You know, you've got to retract your shoulders. It's just a total, pretty much a total body exercise. So, the benefit from that and the hormone response you're going to get from that is much more powerful than the benefit or the hormone response you're going to get from just sitting there and doing leg extensions and get really good at leg extensions. And then on top of that, how functional are leg extensions? You know, when in your life are you ever going to do a leg extension in real life, right? But how often do we squat? Every time we sit down, every time we go to take a poop, every time we get in the car practically. You're almost doing a single leg squat when you sit to get in a car. You know, you're kind of doing a single leg squat when you step up to step up into a truck or step up onto a stair, you know, so the squat is very functional. So I'm kind of getting a little bit off of the direction of where I wanted to go with this. So today's workout was, pretty much all rowing, just because it's going to benefit the deadlift. The hamstrings were a little bit sore. Hamstrings and glutes were a little bit sore from legs yesterday. So I didn't really want to push it. Diet was completely fucking thrown off this weekend, just because of drill. I think Saturday I ate like once, and then came home and squatted. So I was pretty surprised that I was able to squat and actually do heavy singles where I was supposed to be doing heavy singles at. And so it was interesting, to be able to see that. But the cool thing about after the workout was, me and my wife made pizza with Kodiak cakes. So if you haven't tried these, you can get this pancake and all-purpose baking mix called Kodiak cakes. And they're whole wheat, or they're chock full of protein. And so we made this pizza. And, it was kind of like we've been wanting to do this type thing for a while. So we finally had enough time in the evening to do it. So we're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's make this pizza. So we make the pizza. Turns out great. Nice thick crust. I'm a thick crust pizza guy. I can't really get into the thin crust pizza. I could probably crush an entire thin crust pizza, maybe more than one pizza if it's thin crust. But I'm eating this pizza and I'm like, I wonder what these macros look like. So I'm like, Nikki, how many slices did you cut this pizza into? And she's like, oh, I cut it into 8 slices. So I'm like, all right, cool. So go over, look at the box, and you needed 2 cups of the mix in a box, for this recipe. And so I'm like, okay. And the rest of the stuff in it had like a teaspoon of honey in it. It had yeast and some olive oil, like 3 tablespoons of olive oil. And I think that's it. I think that's all it called for. And some warm water. That's how you, and that was everything that went into the dough. So I'm like really curious about like what one slice of pizza, because it wasn't a really big slice. And of course, all of the slices were not perfectly even, but they were pretty close. Nikki's a good pizza cutter. I look at the box, figure out how many. Now, here's the thing. Here's a cool lesson to do is if you want to figure out how many, you know, grams of proteins, fats, carbohydrates are in something that you're eating like this, you got to start big and work small, right? So we looked at the box, and the box said, you know, X amount of protein per serving, and we had four servings. So one serving was half a cup, and we used 2 cups in the recipe. So, okay, we had 4 servings of this mix in this entire pizza. So we said, okay, so there's a total of, you know, X amount of protein, X amount of carbs, X amount of fat in the entire pizza. And then I broke that down into 8 slices to get an average of, you know, what one slice looks like. And, you know, when it comes to the cheese, that's a little bit more difficult because, you know, how much mozzarella is actually on your slice of pizza. But, you know, whatever. So basically it came out to, and these slices are a lot smaller than a slice that you would get at a pizza place, but it came out to 6 grams of protein per slice, 22 grams of carbs per slice, and a negligible amount of fat. There's like 1 gram of fat in one serving. So there's like 4 grams of fat in the entire pizza. So in, and of course that's just from the crust. So in the, of the entire crust, you got your 6 grams of protein per slice, 22 grams of carbs, and pretty much no fat. There, it's bread. There's pretty much no fat in it. So it was a pretty, I was pretty satisfied with that macro breakdown, especially for a post-workout meal. And it was whole wheat bread, so it wasn't gonna, you know, it's not gonna spike the blood sugar when you eat it, and it's gonna be a nice and slow digesting thing for it in at nighttime, so it can kind of be like a slow release of nutrients throughout the night to help my body replenish the glycogen that I used during this workout, and just help with protein synthesis and recovery. So it was pretty interesting to see, you know, what's actually in it. And I'm kind of a big fan of the Kodiak cakes. They made the pancakes turn out pretty nice, and we've made pancakes, we've made waffles, and then tonight we've made pizza with the Kodiak cakes. So definitely worth looking into. We ended up buying them from Giant, but I'm sure you can find them on Amazon if you don't feel like going to the grocery store. But if they're at Giant, then chances are you can find them at any fucking grocery store near you, most likely. So anyway, I read this article about Family Tree DNA, and basically the title of the article is DNA testing kit company has been handing over genetic data to the FBI. So basically this article talks about how Family Tree DNA was working with the FBI and releasing customers' DNA samples so that the FBI could basically use it to match it up with, you know, anybody who might be wanted. And so they released an official statement claiming that their agreement to work with the FBI would help law enforcement agencies solve violent crimes faster than ever. Now, they did not tell their customers that they were going to take their DNA and hand it over to the FBI and cooperate with the FBI. And I think that, you know, I mean, of course, as they are their own entity, right? Like Family DNA or Family Tree DNA, they're a business, so they can do whatever they want. But, you know, to me, it doesn't seem like good customer service. It doesn't seem like a good idea if you want to keep your customers to have them to just hand over their information to the FBI without telling them. And, you know, it says in the article, this is doing little to calm the growing dissent among its customer base, which is just now learning that DNA results from months or even years ago have been available for matching with FBI-provided samples since last fall. Now, this article was posted February 1st, so it's fairly recent, only about 9 days ago, which is, it's kind of crazy that they've been doing this. It seems like, and by their, from their statement that it would help law enforcement, you know, it seems kind of ballsy that, you know, they would just hand it over and then say like, yeah, this is a good thing. Don't worry about it. This is a good thing. Like, I don't know. To me, it's a little sketchy. I don't know how much of a good feeling I'd have in my gut, if I had used Family Tree DNA and then found out that that my information went to the FBI. But what do I care? I work for the government, so they have all my DNA anyway. So then the second article from mindbodygreen.com. Sounds like a pretty interesting place. New study finds the simple secret to losing the fat you can't see. So this was interesting because it talks about visceral fat. And visceral fat is basically fat that you can't see because it surrounds organs, right? So you can't see it. Like, you can't see it like subcutaneous fat, which is fat that is directly under the skin and you know, you this big beer gut and big arms. And as one of my clients likes to call them, bingo wings, the fat that hangs under your tricep, basically. She calls them bingo wings. It's pretty funny. I've never heard that before. But anyway, I guess it's because when you win bingo, you shake your hands up and down, and then it looks like they're flapping. So basically, this fat, to me, in my opinion, this fat is more dangerous because you can't see it, right? You know, there's no way to see it, like, unless you get an MRI or a CT scan, or you know, you scan the body somehow, but you can't see this fat. And that's dangerous because, you know, when this fat builds up around the organs, it can cause heart disease, high blood pressure, and even diabetes. So you may not even be that quote-unquote overweight or look that quote-unquote fat, but still be at risk for heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, every other disease that comes with being overweight, even though you may not look it, right? That's why some people who weigh or who are the same height and might weigh different but look fairly similar because of this visceral fat. Now, what this article goes into, and this is going to blow your fucking mind. Swear, this is going to blow your fucking mind. Are you ready for this? Exercise beats medicine in reducing visceral fat. No fucking way. You can exercise your way to a healthier body? Fuck, man. I wish. Oh, this is like revolutionary. We gotta spread the word, guys. Spread the word that you can exercise your way to a healthier body. So anyway, I'm not making fun of this article. I'm just kind of reinforcing the basics here with this, right? So Dr. Ian J. Neeland told MindBodyGreen, just because you don't see lots of pounds come off with exercise doesn't mean you are making major strides in reducing your visceral fat, which is a perfect example because, you know, you may not physically see the size changes, especially if you're resistance training, because when you go from nothing to something, you know, I talk a lot about this, like, you gotta have your diet right, you gotta have your, if you wanna make progress, your diet has to be right, your training has to be right, but, you know, when we reel this back in, and you go from nothing to something, your body is going to adapt. You could probably basically feed it nothing, and your body's going to assimilate the food that it has available, the nutrients that it does have available, into building muscle when you first start lifting weights. And this kind of phase is called the newbie gains. It's like, no matter what you do, you know, you're going to see some progress right off the bat. And that's that, like, first stimulus of, like, here's a brand new stimulus that your body's never seen or it hasn't seen in a while. So you're just going to start changing. Your body's going to start adapting to be able to handle the stress that you're putting on it. And so, you know, my point with that being that if you go into exercise and your goal is to lose weight and you're lifting weights and you don't see the scale change, chances are you're putting on muscle at the same time that you're burning body fat. And if the scale is going up and, you know, you're eating healthier, you're eating right, and you're not consuming excess soda and excess sugar consumption and excess carbohydrates, and you're avoiding processed foods, and the scale is going up when you start out training, chances are what's happening is you're building muscle at the same time that you're burning fat, but you're building muscle at a faster rate than you're burning fat. Now, unfortunately, this is not going to last forever, and you'll quickly plateau, or you'll just start to lose weight. But if you see the scale go, basically what I want to say is if you see the scale start to go up when you first start working out, then chances are it's not a bad thing. Just keep at what you're doing, and hopefully the scale will reverse. If it doesn't reverse, then just reach out to me and I'll help you. Anyway, speaking about the scale, not really speaking about the scale, but also speaking about the scale, I'm about 2 weeks out from the next powerlifting meet. Today, I weighed myself at the end of the day. Diet was shit. I had a lot more sodium than I probably should have. and stepped on the scale almost butt naked, and I weighed 155. So we're on the right track for 2 weeks. 2 weeks out, I got to lose 7 pounds, so that's not too bad. And the majority of that probably is going to be mostly water weight. I'm not really changing too much about my diet. I'm scaling a tad bit back on the amount of food that I'm eating, just because, I mean, you know, think about it. If you, not even the nutrients, right, but like just physically the weight of the food, right? So if I'm eating 3 pounds of food, if we add up all the weight of the food that I'm eating, literally the weight of all the food that I'm eating, and I eat 3 to 5 pounds of food in one day, let's say, I'm automatically going to weigh 3 to 5 pounds heavier. I mean, until I take a shit or take a piss, I'm gonna weigh 3 to 5 pounds heavier. So, I'm kind of scaling back on the amount of food that I'm eating right now. I wouldn't even necessarily say I'm cutting. I'm just kind of scaling back the portion sizes a little bit for now. And we'll see how this week goes in terms of body weight. And I'll be weighing myself first thing in the morning. Starting now, since I'm 2 weeks out, it's going to be religious. Every morning, first thing, I'm stepping on the scale to see where I'm at. But speaking of the powerlifting meet, the next meet, I found this article on, actually, a friend of mine shared this on social media, and it's from Elite FTS, which is a pretty reputable powerlifting company and website. I actually have their wrist wraps that I use when I bench, but the title of the article is how to select your meet openers. And this was something that, in my past 2 powerlifting meets, I didn't do any math to figure it out. It was just, you know, what am I doing triples at coming up to the meet? How fast are they moving? Are they moving fast? You know, can I take that and do a single and have it move fast? And I'll, real quick side note, if I say I'm doing triples or I'm doing doubles or singles, it means I'm only doing a triple is 3 reps, a double is 2 reps, and a single is 1 rep. Just for anybody that's not super versed in powerlifting or just like lifting lingo. Did I really just say lingo? Fuck, that's super unhip. Anyway, so this formula for figuring out your meet openers, and now this is something, the opener is probably the most difficult number to come up with, and I've sat in front of my computer with my email open, you know, getting ready to send my openers back to RPS for this meet, and I've sat there and just constantly like, should I do this, should I do that, should I do the other thing? And so basically the formula is you take your max lift during your peak cycle, which is like, you know, coming up to the meet, your max lift, and you take 90% of that, and that's your first attempt. And then your second attempt is your max times 0.97. So 97% of your max is your second attempt. And then your third attempt is 104%. So on bench and squat, they recommend 104%, so you take your max times 1.04, and then for bench, it's 1.025, right? It's 102.5% for bench, and the reasoning behind the bench is just because it's, although it's a, you know, a major lift, it's major compound movement, it's also just the arms, which are generally much smaller than the legs, unless you skip leg day, in which case, you're a bitch. Anyway, so I was really not surprised, but I learned something by reading this article, which is great. And basically what I learned is that the guys that are winning the meets are the guys that are following a strict numbers game when choosing their lift attempts. And they don't fucking try to crush it on their first attempt. Now, in my first meet, there was this group of guys who are like massive dudes, real heavy dudes. And they went for these stupid numbers, stupid heavy lifts, on their first attempt. I think one dude totally bombed out, and because he didn't, he missed all 3 of his first attempts on squat, and it was just like those. The article basically talked about like those types of people who just like wing it, or you know, don't follow a structured, like lift attempt protocol, I guess we could say, are the guys that get hurt and are the guys that lose. And the guys that win, the people that win, and I say guys, but I mean, I'm also talking about girls. It's not a fucking male-only sport. But the lifters who follow a strict, this is what my first attempt is, this is what my second attempt is, and this is what my third attempt is, and it's all based on what I maxed out at prior to this event, those are the people that win events and that basically walk away without injuries because they're not way overreaching. So basically, to break it down, if your max squat was 500 pounds, your opener would be 450 pounds, your second attempt would be 485, and your third attempt would be 520. Now notice there, you don't go for your personal record until that third attempt. Now, there was a time, I think, yeah, so it was my last meet, so it was my second powerlifting meet that I ever did on my bench. My first attempt was at least 92.5% or 93% of my max. Then my second attempt was a new PR for me, and I think it was like 260, I think. It was like 260. Anyway, I missed the second attempt, or I hit the second attempt, and then I missed the third attempt. Anyway, I didn't follow, and I totally, in that meet, I was like, yeah, I want to improve my bench. My biggest thing was to improve my bench, because I think I missed my third squat on that at that meet, and it was just no good. I totally missed my bench, and I think it was because I just didn't follow a solid, you know, this is what your first attempt should be, and I went for that PR on my second attempt, and now that I really, really think about it, I can't remember if I hit it or not, but anyway, the next thing that they talk about is the day of the meet, that you want to drink plenty of fluids and snack a lot. They basically said don't stop snacking and sipping fluids, which the fluids part was kind of surprising to me, because, if I drink a lot of fluids, I feel bloated, and I don't want to lift heavy when I'm bloated, but they're basically just saying, like, continually sip liquid, because you want to stay hydrated, but, you know, you don't want to be bloated, so sip it regularly, keep snacking, so that you can, really have the fuel in your body to perform. So, like, when I learned at my first meet, it was, you know, bring a sugary snack with you, so it was like, what are they fucking called? Sour Patch Kids. It was Sour Patch Kids and Gatorade that I was sipping and chewing on, while I was resting and waiting for my flights. And then in the article, so the reason for that, they made a big point about a salty snack, so like pretzels, which kind of makes sense because it helps to retain water, and, you got your sodium, potassium pumps inside the muscles that help to make everything work. So, I might try something a little different with this meat. I may try like a salty snack instead of just plain sugar. And they also stress the importance of the warm-ups, to take advantage of your warm-up sets before you step on stage and go for your lift. I mean, of course, warming up is 100% essential, but, and you got to do it. And you kind of got to be like, especially if it's a big meet, you kind of got to be like, hey, like it's my turn to go. Like, and just, you know, put yourself in there, because you got to make sure that you're warmed up before you go for, you know, a heavy lift attempt. It was probably one of the best articles that I've read this week. All right, so let's get into the questions for today. Taya asks, are there exercises to help tone the butt and the stomach? No, there are no exercises that alone will tone your butt and your stomach. All right, if you want to tone your body, I'm going to assume that you want to decrease body fat and increase muscle mass, so that you can look more defined, you can show more muscle, and you have less body fat, okay? So the way that you decrease body fat is through your diet. You know, you want to avoid processed foods, you want to avoid sugars and just shit food, right? You want to eat whole, natural, unprocessed foods, right? Chicken breast, broccoli, white rice, ground beef, sweet potatoes, white potatoes, eggs, vegetables, yeah, cheese, all that. And that's how you're going to tone your body, basically, okay? That's how you're going to lose the body fat, is through your diet. And then, you know, to build those muscles, to build the butt, and, you know, to build, to really, really build the lower body, number one is going to be squats. Get fucking good at squatting and practice it and do it a lot. You know, squat 3 times a week. Push yourself on that first day, kind of go moderate on that second day, and then really just focus on form and lightweight on that third day, and just practice your squats, okay? Second one is going to be split squats. This is basically with your foot up on the bench behind you. You're basically doing a single leg squat with your one foot supported behind you. I'll be posting a video this week. I'm not sure what day it's going to go up, but there's going to be a video this week explaining the Bulgarian split squats, so you can see how it's done and a few tricks that I, a few breakdowns in form that I see regularly with clients who are just learning the split squats. Lunges and all three types of lunges. Okay, we got forward lunges where you step forward and then come back to that same spot. We've got reverse lunges where you step backwards and then come back to that same spot. And then we've got walking lunges where you're actually walking and doing lunges. All of those, particularly the reverse lunges and the walking lunges, are going to be great for building the butt. Forward lunges are going to be better for the quad because you've got to push backwards to get back to that starting spot. And to do that, to come out of the lunge, you're going to be using mainly your quads. And then in the reverse lunge, to come forwards back to your starting spot, you're going to be mainly using the glutes. And then walking lunges, you're moving forward. So of course, it's going to be kind of the same thing as those reverse lunges. And then we have hip thrusts. And these you can do with a dumbbell, you can do them with a plate, or you can do them with a barbell. And basically, to do a hip thrust, you've got your upper back on a bench, you've got your legs bent at the knees at about 90 degrees, and you've got a barbell or a plate or a dumbbell on your hips, and you're going to drive your hips to the ceiling and really focus on squeezing your glutes. Now, I mentioned this exercise last because I don't think it is the most essential exercise or the best exercise to build the glutes. I think the three exercises that I mentioned prior, the squats, split squats, and lunges, are better exercises to really build the glutes. Does that mean you should avoid hip thrusts? Absolutely not. If your goal is to build the butt, you definitely should be doing hip thrusts, but your focus should not be on the hip thrusts. It should be on your squats, your split squats, and your lunges. So, those are my four exercises for that I think help build the butt the best. Avoid doing donkey kicks for a bajillion reps because that's not what you need to do. All right, Josh asks, I was told that if I get 8 hours of sleep a night, I will see better results in weight loss than getting less than 8 hours. Is there any truth to this? Absolutely. You know, most people need 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and only a very small percentage of people can make progress off of 6 hours or less. So chances are you are not one of them. And I mean, think about it this way. If you can't recover from your workout, how can you expect to perform? Right? And sleep is when your body recovers, right? Like, we break our bodies down in the gym, we feed our bodies through our diet, and we recover from all of that. We use those nutrients to recover from our breakdown in the gym while we sleep. So if you're not sleeping good or you're not sleeping enough, your chances are you're not recovering 100%. And this is where it can get tricky, you may not be able to know how to track your sleep, how to fully understand whether you're recovered or not. And a little trick that I'm using is by checking your resting heart rate as soon as you wake up. Now, there's been studies that show that an elevated resting heart rate has been linked to overtraining, not being fully recovered. So you can use that data as a method of telling yourself, hey, I could push myself really hard today, or maybe I should take a light day. So what I did is, for 2 weeks, I measured my resting heart rate, and I didn't change anything about my training, kept my diet exactly the same, just measured my resting heart rate every morning to find pretty much a baseline. So where that baseline is about 40 to 44, right? Pretty much every day I landed between 40 and 44. There were some outliers, and I think those outliers are numbers that were on days that I may not have been fully recovered, but I tried to get as best sleep as I could and just find a baseline for my resting heart rate. Now, when I wake up in the morning, I know where my baseline resting heart rate should be. And if it's like six, I think the number is six. If you're 6 BPM higher than where your baseline resting heart rate is, it means you're not fully recovered from your workout. And chances are that day, even if there's something really difficult scheduled, you should take it easy because you're not fully recovered. And there's no sense in going into a massive workout if you're not fully recovered from the last one. It literally does not make sense. So try that out. And I used my phone. My phone has a sensor on the back that I can, I have a Samsung, so it's got the S Health, and so I can check my resting heart rate just by putting my finger on the sensor. So, you know, that might be something you might want to look into. But yes, definitely to answer your question, yeah, I would try getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. I would, if you're getting less than six, chances are it's going to have a detrimental impact on your progress. All right, Yvonne says, what is a good way to grow your chest and increase the bench press? Well, number one is bench press. You want to do it. But you also want to look at some other compound movements, right? So incline bench press, floor press, and dumbbell bench press. Now let's talk about incline bench press. A lot of people are not as strong on their incline bench press as their regular bench press. And, you know, you've got to incorporate more shoulders. You can kind of target the upper pectoralis muscles during the incline bench press. So focus a lot on that, because if you can increase your incline bench press, you can increase your overall bench press 100%. So focus on your incline bench press if you want to improve your flat bench press. Now also, another thing that you can do is superset a compound movement and an isolation movement. And this may sound familiar if you've been listening since the beginning of the episode, but if you take a compound movement on chest and pair that with an isolation movement on chest, you can kind of overload the chest with weight in the compound movement and then train it to almost to failure with the isolation exercise. So you can really go heavy with your compound movement and then really force blood into the muscle with your isolation exercise to really expand those muscle fibers and get them to swell and get bigger. So that's definitely something you should be doing if you want to build your bench. And then finally, frequency. You know, if you want to build your bench, you got to be doing it regularly. Now, my goal right now is to build my deadlift. I want to get really fucking good at the deadlift. So what I'm doing is I'm deadlifting 3 times a week, right? First day that I'm deadlifting, it's very heavy. It is my most intense day, and it's all compound lifts. Pretty much don't do any accessories on that day. It is all heavy fucking lifts. Then on the second day, I do a moderate day and incorporate accessory movements. And then on the third day, I do a light day and focus more on the accessory movements. Now, I'm still deadlifting. It's just only about 45% of my one rep max. So it's fairly light. I'm doing it for reps, and that's that. So focus on all three of those things. You know, incorporate those exercises. Try supersetting a compound lift with an isolation exercise and increase your frequency. And you can take that same blueprint for the deadlifts and incorporate it for your bench press. So with that all being said, thanks for listening to this episode of Drive with Woody Fit. I'm your host, Nate Woods. Unfortunately, as you've already heard, Megan and Michael didn't make this episode, but hopefully they will the next one. And if you like the show and you like what we're doing, share it with a friend, share it with a family member, share it with an enemy, or you can head over to facebook.com/executivefitllc or head over to iTunes and leave a review on one of those two places, and we'll pick the best review from each month and send you a t-shirt. But right now, the giveaway that we're doing is if you leave a review, literally all you have to do is leave a review, and we're going to send you a Drive with Woody Fit coffee mug or a Drive with Woody Fit decal or maybe both, because I got a couple of them left. They're almost gone. So go over, leave a review, and I'll send it right out to you. If I read your review on the show, which I probably will, I'll have you email me your shipping address and I'll get everything. I will just send everything right over to you. So anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of Drive with Woody Fit, and we'll see you next time.